Welcome to From the Heart with me, Dawn Lister. Welcome back. Good to be back for our next episode on season four. And we are welcoming today Mara Branscombe. Mara is a mother, a writer, a yogi, an artist, a teacher, a mindfulness leader, a ceremonialist, and a spiritual coach. She is passionate about weaving the art of mindfulness, self-care, creativity, mind-body practices, and earth-based rituals into her life and work. And she has been leading community ceremonies since 2000. Mara is also the author of Ritual as Remedy, Embodied Practice for Soul Care. And she is the author of her new book, which is just coming out. And I can't believe I've got the wrong piece of paper. Give us the title of your new book, Mara, please.
Sage, Huntress, Lover, Queen, Access Your Power and Creativity Through Sacred Female Archetypes.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited for this conversation. I had the great pleasure of reading this book on a beach in southern Italy. And I kind of took the manuscript down and sat down, and that was me lost for the whole day. It was with my pen and my clips holding things over that I wanted to return to and discuss. So, you know, guys, get out and buy the book. It's incredible. The information will be in the show notes to tell you how you can purchase it and when it's available. So welcome, Mara. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Dawn.
How are you today? How are things with you in Vancouver?
They're great. Wonderful. It's almost summer solstice and one of my favorite seasons to be in life and the garden and community.
Yeah, sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's a great time of year, isn't it? I really enjoy those moments where things start to transition. You can feel a tangible shift in the energy around you. And I think you speak to this quite a lot in your book, if we're in tune, we can feel our body changing gear and wanting and asking us to do different things. I'm jumping way ahead with my question, so I'm going to hold on to that one a little bit, because I think it's really quite challenging to be in tune, and that's not always our fault. But let's talk about that in a bit. Tell us a little bit about your book. Tell us what it's about. You know, tell us what archetypes are and why you felt they were so important to bring to the world at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's fascinating is that I did not mean to write a book on the archetypes. And so it was very mysteriously, mystically, magically arrived in my consciousness. In fact, I wrote a book of blessings and prayers, which I love to write. So it's like poetry, but more in the form of a blessing to get you through a certain time of your life. And I printed out all those poems and those blessings. And I was working with my writing coach, and she said, I'm not sure there's enough here. And so what I did, and I said, yeah, I agree. And so I cut all the poems out. And I sat down on my living room floor and I put them all around me. And there was like 50 of them. And I realized in that moment, they were categories. There were codes. There were the archetypes. There was the mother. There was the maiden. There was the mystic, the sage, the huntress, the lover, the queen. And so I started to pile them into these patterns. And, you know, I've had, you know, the gift of studying the archetypes along the way from an early age, specifically three of them, mother, maiden, crone. So my background is in the pagan Wiccan tradition from an early age. So I had these codes in me and I started to explore all of them. And so I'd love the readers to know that these archetypes, they're not stereotypes. And this is really important information. Because at first glance, we may look at the maiden, for example, and say, oh, I'm not a stereotypical maiden. But what we're trying to access here is codes, patterns, formulas that live both in our consciousness and our unconscious self. And the biggest work that I want to bring forward with this book is about the shadow. And the shadow that lives inside each archetype, which is the power for us to heal, to evolve, and to embody freedom.
Wow, that's really powerful. I love your distinction. The archetypes are not stereotypes. I know I've been teaching some work around the Wild Woman archetype recently myself, and it was really difficult for people to understand the difference between a stereotype and an archetype. Could you speak a little bit to the three, the Maiden, Mother, Crone archetypes? You particularly say that's sort of your main themes that you've worked with throughout your life. Why do you feel that now it was so important for people to be looking at their archetypes and what they can bring for them, what they can do for them?
I feel that we're at a shift. We're at a precipice, standing on the edge of the mountain, the cliff with the beautiful seaside, which is bold. It's a bold, courageous, wild seaside below us, or lakeside or riverside. And it holds the feminine power. And I believe it's time to fly and jump and soar and take a leap of faith, if you will, into living more from the feminine lens through a feminine way of being. This goes beyond man to woman. It's a paradigm shift. We've lived patriarchy for a long time. We have. We've done it. And it's shifting now to what is, we don't quite know yet. And I feel, however, if we gather our feminine forces up and we have a real hard look at certain narratives and paradigms that we're feeding ourselves and our mind on a daily basis, for example, lack, low self-worth, victim, martyr, some of these really easy ways to slip in. If we continue to live that way, I feel we're living out a past paradigm. We're actually perpetuating, perhaps, for example, patriarchy, or, you know, whatever you refer to the past as. And so it was so important to me, and I didn't know how important until I actually started writing it. And I was quite surprised that I wrote this book. And it was so powerful in me. I had to get it out. I had to do it 5 a.m. mornings, because, you know, we're being a mother and having the kids and, you know, all the work, I needed to prioritize the work. And so it came forward to support humanity at this precipice that we're at, to take another way.
That's so eloquent. Thank you for sharing that. As I was reading through the book, I that was something that came up for me a lot, was this is what we need. I kept repeating that to myself. This is just what we need. We need to hear these stories. We need to be able to make connection on this way, because when you step back and do one of the exercises that you offer throughout the book. So the way Mara has set up the book is there's lots of exercises and journal points and meditations and points of reflection where you really sit back and lean into some of the wisdom that she's offering. And if you do that and make the time for it, which I'm not going to say I did it with each one, but I did it with as many as I had time to, it really opens you a window. I think that's the language you use yourself. And it did feel like there was I remember the first one I read was one of the meditations around maidenhood. And I remember reading it and thinking, oh, that's not me. I'm too old for maidenhood. I don't want to go back there. And I thought, oh, no, I'm going to do the meditation anyway. I'm going to try it. And it was so powerful, because the work really took me to a very unhealed place within me. Maybe that's one of the meditations we could practice in a moment. And so, yes, society really is on a precipice, isn't it? We could go either way. It feels deeply polarized. I think that's language that we've used for decades, that we're in a polarized society. And now it almost feels like we're on the verge of civil war in some places, because there's so much polarization between the haves and have-nots. And we do have to make a choice. Where do we want to stand? We want to stand on that line that says, I'm part of the you or I, or do I want to stand in the place that feels more healed, that can see the bigger picture? And I guess that's what you're doing in the book. Is that correct?
That's a beautiful way of sharing that. So thank you for that reflection, Dawn. And yeah, I believe we're here to heal and evolve. And so how do we do that? It doesn't come from someone else. It comes from us. And it really is, this book is really, you know, I've worked with women for years and years and years doing women's work and doing, you know, work for both men and women. And I think I've started to recognize patterns in the stories, in their healing. And often it's the shadow in one of these archetypes. And so if you feel a little bit like, oh, that's not me, or I did that throughout the whole, you know, writing this. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's hard to write about. That's the place I needed to go into, in fact.
Could you speak a little bit to the shadow? Because maybe some of our listeners might not have heard that expression before, understand what that might mean. Could you say a few words about that?
Absolutely. So the shadow is the place within us that is perhaps unhealed. It's perhaps negative, or the inner critic, or that the way you talk to yourself that is unkind, the way you judge yourself that is unkind. It could be inherited perhaps from family, the way, you know, your parents, they did their best, bless them. And, or it could be even karmic. We can come in to this lifetime with a wound from a past life. And whether you believe that or not, it doesn't matter. It's just that that's the shadow. The shadow is past traumas, past pain, past grief, experiences of feeling disconnected and not included, in fact. And what happens is when we start to track our shadow and work with it and befriend it, like to make our, I call it shadow work, to make it conscious, we really do enable the fullest, wisest, most sovereign, free place within us.
Thank you for that. That's really profound. I mean, I think you used the word a moment ago, conscious, and I think that's really important to kind of nail home, isn't it? Because most of our shadow stuff's unconscious, isn't it? You know, the stuff that we are avoiding, we do that unconsciously. We don't consciously go around saying, oh, I don't feel comfortable with X, Y, and Z. I'm going to drink myself to sleep. I'm going to work myself to death. They're just ways that our unconscious try to protect us.
Yes.
So when we become consciously aware of our unhealed parts, and as you say, they could be stuff that's happened to us in this lifetime, or perhaps via our families, or intergenerational trauma, or even wider trauma, society trauma, isn't it?
Yes.
When that becomes conscious, you then have a choice, yeah? You have a choice to say, how am I going to be?
Absolutely. And awareness is the first place to begin. And that's a very generous place to begin. Like we don't have to go and think that we can heal and fix and figure out everything all the time. It is the daily awareness. What motivates me to do that? Why am I doing that? Why am I judging myself or the other person? Why am I saying unkind things to myself or to others? And that goes, if we can hold that consciousness, I believe we start to seep into the unconscious and go, oh, I know why I'm doing that. I'm repeating a pattern. That's how I was treated when I was a child.
Yeah. And then we can do some of the wonderful things that you've suggested throughout your book as ways to heal, because healing's messy, isn't it? It's not something that's particularly comfortable. I mean, it's nice once you're on the other side of it, although there's always more layers as we go through life, that's for sure. But it is a messy procedure, and we need, you know, do you use the expression in your book, a fierce grace, or a fear? What was the expression you used?
Yeah, fierce grace.
Yeah, fierce grace to kind of get us past that. Can you speak a little bit to that, about what kind of ways you are expressing that people can help to support themselves as they're going through this process of uncovering?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would suggest a daily meditation practice or a daily practice, one thing you can do a day that brings you back to your center, out of your mind and into the center of your body, no matter what's going on in life, no matter how messy, how chaotic, how busy, how do you prioritize that? For example, you know, and I call this soul work, self-care, soul care. I wake up early and, you know, for the past 3 years through the writing process too, which has really supported me, is that I light a candle every morning when I wake up. And I have trained myself to not go to my phone first thing or my device. And that was a training. And so you have to put it away and you light the candle and you sit with in silence and you call forward your gratitudes. You visualize your day, even if it's busy, chaotic, and messy. And you just wrap it in light. You wrap it like the light in the candle, the flame of the sun. You wrap your day in light, especially that, you know, when there's tricky transitions, tricky moments, you just give it some of your powerful, expansive energy of goodness, of truth, of beauty. So that, you know, and then I ask myself, what am I here to learn today? So that's very simple. That's 5 minutes. And if people can start to begin their day or have that somewhere in their day or end their day, you know, like in some sort of ritual, we're more likely to hear the call for the healing when it's ready. Then we're more likely to receive the other call for the your intuition that's coming from you, not anyone else, to guide you on the journey.
Yeah. I think it's really hard to set up those habits, isn't it? It's not an easy thing to do. You spoke to about, you know, putting away your device. It's something I'm working on. I've got kind of a little bit addicted to having the phone by the bed. I have yoga nidra on my phone. It started off as a good thing. Yoga nidra on my phone. Yes. I wasn't sleeping. I'd listen to a nidra. And now it's there and it wakes me up on the alarm. And then I pick it up to turn off the alarm. And then there's 10 million notifications. And yes. And then you're drawn in. So I think, like, I mean, devices in themselves are toxic. I think they're dreadful things. Mm-hmm. We need to be getting much more space away from them. But it isn't an easy thing. The world is not set up for us to live intentionally. Mm-hmm. I think the world that we inhabit is set up for us to live unconsciously. What's your thoughts on that?
I think we need to be the light keepers and the trailblazers to change that pattern. That's what I think. I think we need to step up and take personal responsibility and put some nice boundaries around it and know that, you know, yes, we're running businesses and yes, we do need to be on our phones and at times. And, you know, so that putting the phone, the alarm wakes me up, but then I put it in another room while I do my meditation. And so that's just this, that it just becomes a pattern, a good habit, a healthy habit. And then when I go out in nature time, intentionally, I walk my dog, I do my gardening, I go for a run in the forest or the mountains or the lake, the ocean. I also leave my phone at home or turn it off. And so again, that's another, and once we start this, it becomes so generative that it feels good. And then perhaps when we're on the phone, it can be more intentional. Yeah, I'm getting my work done. Boom, 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 boom. Put it away.
That's such a really good piece of advice. I'm sure this is going to be something that many, many people are relating to. Because I think, as I said a moment ago, the world that we inhabit really doesn't serve us to be, you know, to be free, to be conscious, to be aware, to be artistic and creative and have space in our day. It sets us up for feeling like we're in a place of lack or in a place of not good enough. So we're always striving to, you know, I don't know, complete the work or get more wealth or have more followers or all that rubbish that people seem to be so concerned about. But actually, when we step away from it all and lean into our soul and our, you know, you speak about it as being our center, that place is so healing and so nurturing. And why wouldn't we want to be there more often? You know, so what you just said about, you know, really setting boundaries and taking personal responsibility really, really rung true. I was just reflecting, when we think about society right now and the epidemic of poverty on many levels, not just literal poverty in terms of people haven't got enough to eat, you know, there's the poverty of companionship, you know, poverty of connection, poverty of spirituality. There's so many different types of poverty, and the lack of compassion that we're seeing across the world shown by our governments towards the, you know, the people that we that they are governing. How do you feel we're evolving on a planetary level? Because you speak, you know, about the archetypes and this, how we're evolving as individuals, but also we're evolving as communities and societies, aren't we? How do you see that evolving? Do you feel that we're beginning to make significant shifts to make changes, bring us more in alignment with the compassion and the connection that really sits at our heart?
Such a deep question, Dawn, and thank you for that. And I'm not sure if I have the answers for that. And what I will say from what I've observed in my life and in my children's life, and that there, and actually this just struck me 2 days ago. I just actually worked with this on a session for new moon. I do new moon rituals and full moon rituals in community with others. And it struck me that even though there is so much imbalance and strife and grief and violence in the world, that there is also this, what I spoke about earlier, this precipice that we are, this opening, this bridge, this channel to live another way, in fact, that's more harmonious, just, fair, connected, looking out for everyone, kind of community energy. It is being shown. It is visible. You know, and I think the pandemic also gifted us that there was something that happened, as hard as the pandemic was, and that there was this liberating energy in a way of like, what is just? How can I clean up my languaging, my actions, so that the generations to come can imbue, empower a sense of freedom, sovereignty, and community in that place. Now, what I will say, so I feel that is happening. It is not fully realized. And now I feel the bridge to wholeness is love and compassion. It is that, so that the generations, and I see this in my children, 9 and 12, daughters, amazing, and an amazing amount of work it is to live in this age of technology. It's a lot of work. It's hard on them. As much as I refrain from, you know, the devices, and, you know, they're not even on social media, thank goodness, yet. And so the work I feel to come is how much more can we hold a sense of radical self-love, deep compassion, even for the opposition, even for the government, even for the ones that oppress. So starting to kind of work that shift in the mind, that it's not, life isn't happening to us, it's happening for us, it's happening with us. So can we start to hold and bridge? I almost have this vision of, you know, just many, many, many in a circle with their hands high, palms touching, elevating the consciousness of heart wisdom. And when I say that, I don't want to get cliche about it. I want it to be able to be embodied from the center. The consciousness from the center, not just from the head. And so that's what I would say, that we're on our way and we have work to do to lift each other up.
Yeah, you're so right. It comes back to the individual, doesn't it? It's down to, we can speak about community and the out there, and we can other, or we can say, I can only speak for myself. And I can take action for myself. And as you were speaking, what was coming to me was, it is about action, because it can't just be about love and light, you know, which feels so, what's the word I'm looking for, reductive, because actually love and light is an action. And if we want to see change in the world, we want to see communities coming together and, you know, this bridge of love and compassion. What does that look like? You know, how does that, what does that look like for you in your life? How are you starting with yourself, I guess? How are you showing yourself love and compassion? Yeah, so I guess that's what you're saying. Let's start with ourselves, which take actions which really nurture our own soul, our own being, and then from there we can have an impact on the communities around us.
And I think that the, and I can read this maiden meditation, I think that's a really nice segue, because, you know, my intention in writing this book and offering these practices is to get us to that place of love in action, to feel free enough, to feel loved, cared for, nourished enough to then have the energy to do that. So this is from the Maiden Archetype, and this is a very short meditation. So for the listeners, I welcome you to just really soften your whole body. Take a deep breath in and a deep breath out, and receive this meditation. Feel back into a time when you were fearless, wildly creative, and free, even if you only get a glimmer. What were the conditions in your life? What was your relationship with yourself and with others? What lit you up? Close your eyes and recall a time in your life when you felt invincible, ready to take on any task, climb any mountain, travel, explore, fall head over heels in love, fight for what you believe in, embrace the open road before you. This is the maiden's essence, and this lives inside you. Can you get a sense of this energy inside the maiden archetype? Notice what this evokes for you. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. And maybe our listeners on the podcast can take a moment to perhaps reflect on that and make some notes, which is certainly what I did. And for me, and I'll share what came up for me, because I think it was interesting. What came up was a shocking realization. I've hardly ever felt free, ever. I've always had a huge amount of personal responsibility, even as a child. The responsibility that was put upon us and our family was, our parents were Jehovah's Witnesses. They were part of this very dark cult, and they put a huge amount of responsibility on us, even as young children, to save everybody from Armageddon. And then having children quite young and having, you know, the responsibility of looking after myself and trying to create some kind of life was very challenging. So when I did that meditation, there was a lot of sorrow after the resistance, which was like, I'm not doing this. And then no, I'm going to do this. And then was, oh, that's really sad, you know, that I had such a lack of moments of real freedom. And then, of course, then I stepped into, okay, now I need to look after myself. But then what came out of that was I came home from our little trip where I'd read the book and done the exercise, and I kind of dusted out my art studio and said, well, I feel free when I'm painting. I feel free when I'm making. So I'm going to gift myself that each day, which is what I've been doing as a result of that. So I imagine that for our readers, listeners, if you want to take a moment, there may be something in the meditation for you that might feel similar.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. That is so beautiful. That's your takeaway. And that's exactly the work we're talking about. You're right on track with what it evoked for you, right? You were, you know, resistance, sorrow. That's the healing. Call to action. Amazing. Painting. And for some other listeners, it would be, well, for me, probably writing that, it was me running barefoot down the beach as a child, by the lake in which we would visit every summer. And it was, I remember it being so immersive. I remember laying on the hot sand and feeling so warmed and so held and so right there. And that's the freedom that, you know, I feel in the power of the elements, the power of nature to soothe us.
Yeah. And I guess for people who haven't felt that yet and maybe don't know where to look for it is to maybe start with something like nature. Would you recommend that?
Absolutely. And, you know, and nature, and anytime you feel, I call it a glimmer. I just, you know, when you look at the ocean or the lake and the sun is beaming down and you see those glimmers, it's one of my favorite things in life, probably because I got to spend my summers at this lake. I was so blessed and privileged to be able to do that. And so it's a code in me. It's an imprint in me that allows me to take this deep exhale. Yeah. My whole nervous system regulates in that moment. And I go into like magic and, you know, inner child freedom. And so those are the things. So whatever that is, whether it's nature, whether it's being cozy with a cup of tea and a blanket around you, getting into bed midday and reading a book, like these are the things that when we recognize that they make us feel free and nourished, that's where the healing is. And can we give ourselves permission to give ourselves that as adults?
Yeah. And it's very hard because I think many, many people are stuck in survival mode, and that's not their fault. You know, as we said earlier, we are in a world that kind of encourages us to stay in that state. So, and you might not know that you're in survival mode. That's the other thing. If you're in that place of constantly doing and being busy, 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 or outward looking and not actually taking the time to check in with yourself ever to notice how you're feeling until you get sick, then you're not going to know that actually I'm not connected and I'm not present and I'm not, you know, at one with the energy of the planet around me. And, you know, that's a great loss, actually, to not be there. It's a great disservice, because when we are in nature and at one with the vibration of the planet, we are energetically and physically in such a better space, you know, and they're more expansive just for everything around us. We've got that bit more space in us, don't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Beautiful.
You spoke also in some depth about the mother wound and how in some cultures there's a belief that we carry 7 generation of trauma and gifts in our bodies. And I know that's being spoken about a lot. In fact, I know there's quite a lot of research being done into the imprints of trauma being carried in the DNA from mother to child. And so, you know, kind of this belief that has been held by various cultures for centuries is actually now being borne out as a truth within the medical profession. They're seeing that this is an actual thing. I had an experience of this myself in a regression, actually, session that I was having done a number of years ago in therapy when I was having one of my training therapies. And a memory came up of something that happened apparently to me as when I was younger. And I had no recollection. And the therapist was adamant that this had happened to me because I wouldn't have had the memory without it. And I'm not going to share what it was, but it wasn't a very nice thing. But as it turned out, it happened to my mother. And she'd never told anyone about it. But I had this physical memory.
Wow.
In my head. And when I was taken into a place of deep relaxation and done the healing, whatever it was they were doing, this was the memory that came up to me, right down to the room that it happened in, what the position my mother was in the room, who was there, everything that happened. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Mad.
Wild. Just wild.
Yeah.
And there you go. Yeah. So the mother wound, this, you know, could be also the father wound, we could say, but this intergenerational trauma that we receive through being in our mother's womb, you know, what the circumstances or the patterns, the memories, the trauma, that does get passed down to us. And there's two ways one could go about it. One could leave it completely unconscious and perhaps unresolved, and yet you may carry that pain or that grief for your life. Or you may just start to be curious and explore. And I say curious because we don't want to over, you know, look for things that also keep us in a narrative. I've seen that a lot in the work that I do. We all have certain places within us to heal. We may have received them through our family line or our own personal experience on this life, or perhaps a karmic unfolding, the alchemy of our astrology. There's many factors at play. And I believe if we hold the space for inquiry, curiosity, and also receive support from trained therapists and counselors, like when we're ready, right? Just to really get that trained, high level support, if possible, that would be so deeply supportive to your journey on this planet. Mm-hmm. And coming to a space of forgiveness when one is ready. And so sometimes I believe we start with self-forgiveness. And that could lead to perhaps being able to then forgive others when one is ready. If there was harm done, caused, ways of living and being, family of origin, what it does is it allows you then to be more free. It's almost like we're cutting energetic ties. And this is really what I want to bring forward with the mother wound, and I talk about it, is when we cut these ties to blame, shame, victim, martyr consciousness, we become more liberated in our own being, because that pain wasn't meant for us necessarily, right? But it may be our work to cut the ties to it, so we don't pass it along, in fact. And there's two questions I'll bring forward, two inquiries, two curiosities. As one is working through some of the pain or the patterning that comes with the shadow, it is the first question, what is true in this moment? Okay, so listeners, you might even want to write that down. What is true in this moment? So that could keep you out of drama and blame and just really getting into your own center. What is true? You could call out your physical symptoms. You could call out what's going on in your mind. You could call out the external environment. You name the truths though. And then you ask the second question, what is the highest goodness right now? What is the highest goodness right now? And so that answer could be, the highest goodness is that I'm going to drink a tall glass of water and step outside for a little moment in fresh air. And when you ask yourself what is true in this moment, it could be, my heart is racing. I feel butterflies or anxiety in my stomach. I'm uncomfortable. What is the highest goodness? I'm going to drink a tall glass of water and step outside for a little break. So these are little ways during our day where instead of pushing it down, we're being curious, we're bringing the uncomfortable forward.
Thank you for that. And I've used that phrase. It's quite early on in your book, isn't it? What is the mm-hmm. highest goodness? And I thought it's a great term. I'm going to start using that when I catch myself tightening up. Because we do mm-hmm. it, don't we? Throughout our day, things happen, people say stuff, we witness things, and we can feel our whole system shutting down or tightening to protect us and get defensive. I think that's quite typical, isn't it? We get a bit defensive. So I know I've been a bit defensive myself recently about a few things. So I've been saying, what's the highest goodness here? And quite often it's give it space and do nothing. Do nothing right now till there's the wisdom.
Yeah.
Isn't that so important?
So important. And having some humor and lightness, like let's bring that in, that humor. I love that you just laughed at I laugh at myself daily. I mean, it's complex. We're raising children. I mean, you're a grandmother now. Incredible. We're in our relationships. It gets sticky. It gets niggly. It's high level work is to be present and conscious in our deep relationships.
Yeah, it's really true. And as you go through life, you see the intergenerational trauma playing out, the old patterns that you maybe said, I'll never do that. And then it happens to you anyway, because it's in your DNA somehow, and you've maybe just not worked through it yet. And I really see them as opportunities for growth. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it does. It's true. It's like, do I want to be stuck or do I want to grow? And I'd always want to grow. Sometimes you have to be stuck for a little while because you need to rest. Yeah.
Yes.
You can't always be on a constant path of improvement. You know, you've got to sometimes just say, I'm exhausted. This has been tough. I'm going to give myself a moment. Mm-hmm. And that's when, for me, that's the bringing in of the mother. So, I mean, I've done a lot of work around remothering myself. You know, I have an absent mother. So what would my mother say to me now? And quite often it would be rest.
That is so beautiful. And that's how I work with the archetypes a lot in this book. And when I teach it physically, because now I'm working and teaching and guiding others. And I say, picture your mother, you as your mother before you. What counsel does she have? Picture your sage, your inner elder before you. Does she have a message for you? Or did they have a message for you? And, you know, and like that, the huntress and the queen, and I bring in the weaver at the end. And the weaver holds all of the archetypes in one sphere, in one basket, in one alchemy. And we all have the weaver, and it lives right at our centers. And so we aren't just one archetype. We are all of them in a way. We hold all of these patterns in us, these symbols, these frameworks. And at certain times of our life, we can access the essence, the power, and work to learn from the shadow of it in order to grow.
I it gave me the chills when I read the expression weaver. There's a really cool book, which you may have read by, I think it's Deborah Harkin. It's called Discovery of Witches. And the main witch in there, she's a weaver. And that's what she does. She pulls all the magics together.
Oh, really? I haven't read it.
I think you'll love it. It's a great book. It's a fictional, obviously, but it's a great, great, great book. I think there's a TV series as well. But when I read your thing, the weaver, it really moved me, because I thought, well, that's it. We're weaving our life, aren't we? I don't want to be pushed into a kind of a path that isn't of my choice. But if I don't weave my life and make conscious choices, then I will be pushed down a path I perhaps don't want to be on. Because, you know, we've got to be participant, haven't we? We've got to be present.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I wonder, do you feel like, when I was reading the book, I was thinking, this would be great in community to work. You know, is that how you perceived it, or was it a bit of both? You know, I thought this would be so nice to do some of this work with groups of friends coming together, or a book group, or maybe, you know, if you go to a regular yoga class, you can meet once a month and work through a theme. Was that something that was in your head?
Probably, because I'm a teacher. And I am teaching in my blood from first, you know, many, many, many moons. My ancestors are all teachers. So I'm sure in a way, and I love patterns myself. I love, Gabrielle Roth, she says, it takes discipline to be a free spirit. It takes discipline to be a free spirit. And so the discipline perhaps is, you know, working through these codes and checking out, how do you feel? And so, I think it works beautifully in community and as a book club, for sure. I'm going to be leading a book club on this in the fall. It will be an online platform. Everyone is welcome to join. I think I love to see when other people pick this up and make it something of theirs and work with this energy, because, you know, writing this book and the other book, it really was about being in service to the collective. My intention, my heart intention, was to be in service to the collective. And after all my years of teaching yoga and meditation and mind-body practices and women's work, it really is, I believe if you have the tools, if you have the resources, if you have some practices that are right there for you, that you can eventually self-guide yourself in and through, you are even more in that spaciousness, in that capacity to heal, to evolve, and then to put that right action out into the world.
And I can really see how this will be a wonderfully profound tool for all people. I mean, this really isn't a book just for women. This is a book for everyone. You know, we all, men have the male, I have the maiden mother crone, yes, right within them. You know, this idea that we are yang and yin is, you know, we're a blend. And some people who, you know, identify as male still have that strong female energy that's perhaps more dominant in them than the yang energy. So, you know, as I was reading the book, I thought, my gosh, this is really a book for everybody, that, you know, to lift and to work through these exercises and reflections. I wonder, would you be happy to read us an excerpt from the book to kick off our conversation?
Absolutely. I wanted to read A Sage's Blessing. So this is from the sage archetype and chapter. And the name of this chapter, let's see here, I'll go back a moment. It's called Sage Spirit, Intuitive Waters Flow. So the sage is the one who is the elder within us, who understands their emotional process. And through that, receives the intuitive whispers. So this is a blessing for the sage. I am the sage within. I trust that my current process is the teaching that I am meant to receive at this time. I honor my body as my timeless temple. I welcome my inner critic as a messenger to clear my mind of lack, confusion, and unworthiness. I let go of all things I cannot control at this time. Vulnerability and attentive listening are my way to walk hand in hand with my intuition. Like the holy rivers feeding the mother ocean, I stay fluid inside the great mystery of life. I call upon my guides and the forces within the natural world for support. I am not alone. My hands and heart are warmed by the wisdom carriers that came before me and those who will come next. I cast my compassionate energy freely across the universe. I am attuning to my soul frequency in this moment. I welcome my inner elder home, trustworthy, wise, and expansive.
Wow, thank you. That's really beautiful. Resonates so strongly. Listen, this book is a real gift, and I really encourage our listeners to go out and buy a copy. When does it come out in print? It's quite soon, isn't it?
Yes, July 25th is publication date, and pre-sales are up. So you can pre-order this book wherever you get your books. And on my website, in fact, there's pre-order bonuses. So you'll receive, if you buy the book, pre-order it, you can go into my website and there's a meditation for you. There are journal prompts for you. And I believe there's an excerpt also for you.
Oh yeah, there is. I had already checked it.
Oh, thank you.
And so Mara's website will be on the show notes along with some other information. She also runs retreats. I think you've got one coming up quite soon. Did you want to share that?
Yes, I'll be at Finhorn in Scotland, August 21st to 26th. And the retreat is called Connecting to Source, Movement, Ritual, Meditation. And I will be working with this book and my other book, Ritual as Remedy. So be weaving the practices into our daily work.
So if you're thinking of taking a retreat, I have been to Findhorn. Obviously, I'm Scottish, I don't live in Scotland now, but I took my kids there when they were little, and it's a really special place. It's quite magical. And I remember they have like a street. They have lots of little streets within the community. And one of the streets is made of, all the homes are made of whiskey barrels. So great big whiskey barrels that, you know, they would store whiskey in for 20, 30 years. And they are enormous. I had no idea they were so big. And rather than throw them away, they've taken the barrels and they've made them into homes. They have these beautiful, they're almost like hobbit homes, circular homes. And everybody who lives on community has to do some kind of work to support the Findhorn. There is a very special energy in that place. And the central hall, whereas I imagine you'll be teaching, is, it'll blow your socks off. So if you're thinking of taking a retreat, if you're called to the work that Mara's doing, do consider hopping on and booking on to that. It sounds absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us and making the time for these important conversations. It's been really wonderful to connect. I hope everybody has enjoyed our conversation. Please do consider leaving us a review. It does help push us up the old rankings. All very dull, isn't it? But it'll only take you a moment. And if you have any questions for Mara or for me, please leave them in the little section where you can leave a comment. There's anything, anyone you would like to hear, or if you'd like Mara to come back and talk about something else or in more detail about a particular topic, I'm sure we can make that happen at another time. So keep well, everybody. Look after yourself, stay present and stay kind. And thank you once again for your wonderful time, Mara. It's been wonderful to meet you.
Thank you.